I want us to look at this passage. If you might have your Bibles, you might want to open to Luke chapter 9. What is going on, if you once get to that chapter, you will see that we have the feeding of the 5,000. After that, Peter, speaking for the disciples, makes the declaration that, who do you say I am? And it's Christ, the Son of God. They recognize him as who he is. Jesus then immediately predicts his own death and resurrection, which doesn't sit well with their theology, to be very honest with you. I'm sure they would have been, all honesty, I have to believe they would have been thinking, he must be speaking metaphorically or something, you know, because he talked that way. Jesus taught often with metaphors, and so when he talked about the death and the resurrection, because that wouldn't have fit. They were expecting this Messiah to be this ruling king that would just go in and set up the government. That was a problem for them all along, even though it couldn't be more plain what he was predicting in verse 21 and 22. And then it brings us to 23. And let me just read it. We'll read it together up here. I'll read it to you, but follow along. Then he said to them all, if anyone desires to come after me, notice he just predicted his own death and then resurrection. Anyone come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it. For whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. For what profit it is a man if he gains the whole world and in himself destroyed or lost? Is himself destroyed or lost? For whoever is ashamed of me and my words, of him the Son of Man will be ashamed when he comes in his own glory and in his Father's and of the holy angels. Now, that is a verse that should be sobering to every one of us. You know, are we living a life that, are we speaking up for the Lord? Are we the bold witness we need to be? The reality is, there's no way the broader Christendom is doing this. Are we part of the broader group? Are we standing up like we ought to? Are we going to be held accountable in this area? Does anybody know who this man is? He actually was recognized in 2009 in our Congress, although he had died in 72. He was a born-again Christian believer in China before the revolution there. And he grew and was a powerful church planter. And then the revolution happened, and he continued to plant churches. He continued to be a bold witness. And he spent his last, he died at 68. He spent his last 20 years in prison and died in prison. Okay, now, you say, well, that isn't very good. It's horribly sad, actually. He has written many, many books. Much of it were written, somehow or another, written in prison and gotten, you know, I don't know how he got them out of there, okay? But you can find books that are now translated into English. And if you want a good read, this is some good stuff. Really powerful stuff. I personally am going to be looking for more. I've only read quotes. I have not read any of his books from start to finish, but I am, after reading some of the quotes that come from his books, I am now motivated to say, I gotta get this author and read a little. Watchman Lee, that's not really his, that's his, I think the author's, the name that he authors his books under, he has a Chinese name, and if you go on the internet, you can get it, but because that would be a more of a struggle for me to say, I use his more common known. I'm going to give you one quote. And I'm telling you, this fits this passage we're studying. That's why I'm sharing it with you. God's means of delivering us from sin is not by making us stronger and stronger, but by making us weaker and weaker. This is surely rather a peculiar way of victory, you say, but it is the divine way. God set us free from the dominion of sin, not by strengthening our old man, but by crucifying him. not by helping him to do anything, but by removing him from the scene of action. Now, I'm telling you, that quote, that statement, is right on the money in part of biblical sanctification. We need to die to self. It is a powerful truth that we need to learn how to depend on Christ in our lives. And this is a man who literally lived it out. His whole life, from, I don't know what his earlier part of life is, but what I read about his life after the communism came about in China was as rough and as bad and as horrible as you can imagine. But boy, he was a powerful witness. Well, let me continue. I didn't have a handout. I really regret I didn't, actually. I'm going to share with you just one verse, one part of one verse in here that is just so powerful, at least it is to me. Then I hope that I can just, hope you can just grasp a little how this verse has helped me in my life. It's living the great life. You know, I'm not just talking about living a life. A lot of people just get through life. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about experiencing the fullness that God intends for all of us. In this verse, I'm really talking about that portion. If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. A fascinating verse. A fascinating phrase, one after another. And I just wanted to park alongside of this for a second. The first one is this great life. It is absolutely linked, connected, anchored. I don't know what the right word was. I struggled with what the right word was. This linked idea or anchored or bolted to. But I'm telling you, it doesn't happen. Your life in Christ, if you really want the fullness of Christ, it cannot happen without denying ourselves. It's right there. And we do not see it in our culture today. It is rarely modeled before us in our daily, we live in such an affluent culture, even the people with the greatest struggles we don't see it a lot. We do see it some, but it's rare. But it shouldn't be rare, it should be very manifest in every one of our lives. Denying ourselves. How many of you know this man? Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a Lutheran pastor, scholar, and by the way, an excellent scholar. The Cost of Discipleship. Talk about a book that everyone ought to read. That's one of them. Everyone ought to read that one. That was written early in his ministry, by the way. It wasn't written after he was in prison, but he lived it out when he was in prison. This man came to popularity, really became popular worldwide, as a Christian theologian, middle of the 30s, towards the end of the 30s. In the end of the 30s, he was asked to be a guest lecturer at one of the seminaries in New York, and was so just phenomenally received that they immediately offered him a full-time professorship. And he could come there, and they wanted him to come, and they were encouraging him to come there. You know what the man does? He says, can't do this. Can't do this. I have no peace about doing this. And I just took one, and this is a quote from one of his biographies. He said, even though, this was an escape for him, okay? There could have been an escape from what obviously was crumbling in his own country. He, by the way, already had been speaking in Germany, and he was spoke so powerfully against Nazism that in one of his radio broadcasts, in the middle of his declaration that Christians need to stand up and oppose what they're saying under this name of Nazism, that's Christians. It is anti-Christian. And it was cut off in the middle of a sermon. He already knew he was in trouble. And then he gets this opportunity to come to New York. He preaches and speaks and teaches in New York, offered the position, but says this instead. He says, I must live through this difficult period in our nation's history with the people of Germany. He said, here's the point. If I didn't copy rest of the, there's a larger body of material this came from. He clearly knew it was dangerous to return. But he said, forget it. I owe it to my people. I owe it to the believers there, and I'm going back. In his book, The Cost of Discipleship, he made a statement that almost looks prophetic as you look at the rest of his life. He is arrested in 1943. In May 8th, if I have the date right, and I think I do, May 8th of 1945. And if you know your history very well, that's just a couple weeks before the war ends. In 43, he was arrested, tried, and sentenced to death for treason, for the propagation of what they said was the false teachings, and he was really propagating the gospel. He lives in that prison environment. In fact, there was one quote I was very tempted to just put up on the screen of the doctor that cared for him. And I'll paraphrase it now, and it doesn't do it justice, actually. He said, I had the unique privilege of being witnessing and being present when he prayed his last time by himself before he was taken off to be executed. And he was such, this man said, I am a doctor of 50 years, and I have never seen a man, a gentleman in more peace facing death. Boy, isn't that an encouragement to me? It is to me. Is my faith strong enough to face execution with peace? But his was. But in his earlier book, when he was a younger man, before he had experienced the prison, he made this statement about discipleship. When Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die. Now, what he was speaking to is the passage that I'm preaching from. And what he is talking about was, I don't think he had in mind execution at this point in his life. It would have been before all of this. But he totally understood that we needed to die to self if we're really going to be the men and the women that God intends for us to be. Now, isn't it stirring to me when I think of the level of understanding of some people? And I yearn for that same level of dedication and commitment in my own life. And I suspect many of you here are committed and want the same in your life. Romans 12:1 tells us, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable, which is a reasonable service. That is the heart, Bonhoeffer, the heart of knee is what every one of us as believers should have. Galatians chapter 2, verse 20 says, I have been crucified with Christ, and it is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. The point is, if we're going to live the great life, we need to honestly understand, there's no question, it is absolutely, unequivocally linked to us figuring out what it means to deny ourselves. Now, you just got to start asking yourself, how should that change the way I look at life? How should it change the way I spend tomorrow? That's the point, actually. Every one of us needs to be asking. The second point is in this phrase, in Matthew you see an almost identical phrase with the exception of one word, that word, daily. But it says so much, it says volumes. It says, take up his cross daily. Now, again in context, you and I would probably, in our culture, we struggle in that. You read commentaries, they're just all over the map on what does it mean to take up your cross daily. But let us just be understanding that to someone in that first century, they would have understood the terminology here. When he said, take up your cross, he was referring to somebody who was condemned to die and was asked to carry the cross portion of the bar, crossbar through the city. In other words, he's not living for himself now. He's carrying this cross to his point of crucifixion. It's identification. It's all about identification. It's all about, I have, in and of myself, I have no value. C.S. Lewis said this in his letters. I'll read it. The real problem of the Christian life comes when people do not usually look for it. This is where the problem comes. And he's right on the money on this. It comes the very moment you wake up each morning. I'll tell you, well, that's where it is for me. Especially if I wake up and for whatever reason, I don't get up when I first plan to get up and then I get up late. Ever had that experience? It may be only 5 minutes late, but if I get up 5 minutes late, it seems like my whole day is only, you know, I never catch up. You know, it's just a different, it's not a good thing. It comes the very moment that you wake up each morning. All your wishes and hopes for the day rush at you like wild animals. And I would use stronger than wishes and hopes, more like fears and, you don't understand what I'm saying. And the first job each morning consists simply in shoving them back, in listening to that other voice, taking that other point of view, letting that other large, stronger, quieter life come flowing in, and so on all day. What is he talking about? Well, to me, that spoke volumes because I often wake up and I say, Lord, let me use this day for you. Let me end this day closer to you. Lord, let me use it and let me not be frustrated when the schedule that I put together turns out to have no relevance to the way I'm going to spend my day. That's probably the most frustrating ones. I don't know for you, but it is for me. You know, when I go to bed at night, I have a pretty good idea what I plan to do. It's amazing how often that doesn't work out. But when it doesn't work out and you can see the hand of God in it at the end of the day, you're just thrilled. Okay, so what's the point? It's the daily aspect. This is not a battle that you pray the sinner's prayer 10 years ago and I've got it covered. That's not the concept we're talking about here. We're recognizing that we are soldiers in a battle. And the battle rages every day. And we need to go into each and every battle prayed up and focused on bringing glory to Him. He is a piano player. He died, I think, 10 years ago or something like that. He's also a conductor. He won a lot of awards in the arts area. He made this statement, and I believe it is a powerful one, and in particular when we talk about it in a Christian life. He made the statement about his piano playing. It says, if I miss a day of practice, I know it. If I miss the second or 2 days, my manager knows it. And if I miss 3, my audience knows it. Now, when I read this, here's the thought that comes to my mind. You and I can hide, fallen away from the closeness that we should have with the Lord and our time in the Word and our time in prayer. Can we not do that? We can hide that for a while. And no one else will know it, but you'll know it. And if you do it very long, others are going to know it too. And that's the point. Take up your cross daily. We need to recognize that living the great life, the life that God intends, the plan that He has for you, it requires you to deny yourself. And it requires it to be maintained on a daily commitment. And it's experienced by walking with Christ. Notice in the phrase, and see, I just took this part of the verse. Let him deny himself, the next phrase, take up his cross daily, and then follow me. Galatians chapter 5, 24 and 25, right after he gives the fruit of the Spirit, Paul makes this statement, and those who are Christ have crucified the flesh. It sounds a lot like this earlier phrase, deny himself and taking up his cross, have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. In other words, this is not necessarily easy. There's going to be a pull, but you just, no, I'm dead to that. I'm not going that direction. I'm not listening to that. And if we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. In other words, our actions ought to be a manifestation of our relationship. Now, some people profess and claim to have a decent relationship with God and are walking in sin, and it doesn't match. They ought to examine themselves whether or not they're in the faith. And I'm not talking to that. You wouldn't be here on a Wednesday night. I'm talking to us. Are we walking with Him? Are we denying ourselves? Are we doing it on a daily basis? Because yesterday's denial of self is not good enough for today. That's the point. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. I think of Psalms 23. Beautiful passage. And I could have highlighted, He makes me to lie down. But I was stunned by this when I thought about this passage about following Him. This beautiful psalm says, He makes me to lie down in green pasture. He leads me, where? Beside the still waters. I had a situation with another young man that I knew he was facing trouble, and I heard about the situation, and then we hung up. I called him back about 10 minutes later and said, and I didn't get through to him, but I was able to leave a message. I said, I just want to call you back and reassure you that I'm praying for you and remind you that just because this happened doesn't mean that God doesn't know what's going on. And He is there with you. And He's not going to leave you nor me. He leads us beside the still waters in the midst of the storms of our world. Isn't that a sweet truth? If we'll walk with Him. And He restores my soul. He leads me in the path of righteousness, not for my name, but for His. And 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21. For to this you were called. This is powerful. Because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow His steps. What do you expect those steps to look like? Like a bed of roses? No, it's right in the context of our Savior suffering. We should not be surprised when the world throws us events that kind of look like they're bigger than us and seem like they're going to crunch us. But we do not have to worry about that. Because greater is He that is in us than he that is in the world. It is linked, this greater life, this abundant life, John calls it the abundant life, is linked to denying ourselves. It is maintained, and that's an important word. I'm comfortable that I chose the right word in the maintain. Maintained by daily commitment. And we've got to be careful on that. We've got a purpose. That's got to be part of our routine, to recommit on a daily basis, if not multiple times during the day. And it's experienced only if we purpose to walk with Him. Abide with Him. And for me, you know what? It comes down to some practical things. As I'm going through the day, I'm looking around to see where the hand of God is at work. Whether it be Tom knocking on my door today. Or whether, you know, who it is. It's just all sorts of just, it's seemingly like random events, but they're not random when God is a sovereign God, has control of the world. They're not random phone calls. They're not random running into people at different situations. God knows about these. Walk with Him. When my kids were younger, I would say to them over and over and over again this phrase. Walk with, it says they were leaving the house, walk with the Lord and be a blessing. Isn't that a good idea? Walk with the Lord, and it's not about yourself, be a blessing. Bless the Lord with your behavior, bless others. Love the Lord thy God, and out of that, love your neighbor as yourself. And that's my devotional challenge for the middle of the week. To deny, to daily recommit, and to just faithfully walk with Him.